Welcome, everybody, to episode 266 of the Metabolus 2 podcast featuring David
and Ben. And today is our lucky day.
Lucky day.
Lucky, lucky day.
What a lucky day this day is today.
It's their return of... yeah, as always.
There you go. Sorry, I interrupted with a snigger there, you were saying?
Yeah, it's the return of Millie Gibson as Ruby Sunday, or as we like to call her around here, Belanda.
Belanda. She's back. And my concerns last week about how do they square with getting back to 2025, I suppose, are settled. So awesome. Because we start out in 2007, right? Or was it 2006? Unclear.
New Year's Day 2007.
Right.
And then that's where Belinda and the Gatwa Doc were materializing. And then Belinda is sidelined for pretty much the rest of the episode.
Yeah, it's what we like to call here at the Metabolus 2 podcast headquarters a Dr. Light episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a return to 73 yards or whatever.
And all the others to your Blink as well, of course.
Blink.
And all of those celebrated Dr. Light episodes.
Oh, yes. I was thinking specifically to if Ruby, it seemed almost a sequel of her 73 yards story of last year where she was, it was also a Dr. Light story.
Yeah. You mean when she was in a pub?
Yeah, when she was in the pub and they had the...
monsters outside the pub. Yeah, okay, yeah.
And the Prime Minister, Ap Gwilym, who...
Oh, I missed that. Was Ap Gwilym in this episode?
I don't think so.
Okay, All right, okay.
No, but it just... It had a similar feel to it, to me, at least.
Yeah, I've read stuff online saying that it had a similar feel to 73 Yards, and I didn't really think it did that much.
Yeah,
other than it was just Millie Gibson leaping around on her own doing things.
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously there was a threatened pub, but you know, it's Britain. The pub is always going to be threatened at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I guess UNIT was in it as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt the antagonists, whereas in 73 Yards were a mysterious 73 yards away.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, they weren't 73 yards away at all. They were all over the place.
They were every which way you'd look.
Yeah, but not a Hilda Winters in sight, sadly. It's a Dr. Light, Ruby Sunday heavy episode.
So let's follow up the Hilda Winters thread. Think Tank, I guess, makes their reappearance.
But it's not the think tank that we know and love, is it?
And it's certainly not the SRS either. So
no. I thought that was a little bit gratuitous, I'm afraid. I mean, obviously, think tank means a lot to you and me.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean a lot to a lot of the viewers, and it didn't. I mean, I don't think the SRS, having survived a near brush with
UNIT,
instigating a global thermonuclear conflict,
mm-hmm.
would then mutate into a group of podcasters. Or maybe they would. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so. And
I don't think so either.
I think this is Pete McTeague just recycling a name, and I wouldn't even call it fan service. It more seemed like a...
McTeague service?
Well, it just seemed more like a nose thumbing at Tom Baker's debut story, Think Tank.
Okay.
Which was also a Think Tank UNIT story, so...
Right, maybe. Right. Yeah, okay. I get.
So, few initial thoughts. First off,
yep.
Like
you
I
sound
said...
flummoxed.
Yeah, so like I said last time, I'm not sure that Millie Gibson is a strong enough actor to pull off being the primary focus in the story. And I say that again. I mean, she did fine, but I'm just not feeling it, I guess.
You say that, and I find myself agreeing with you. Yeah, I think part of the problem with the story is that she is a slightly wishy-washy actor, really. I mean, I thought the story... Again, I'm going to go back to my whole problem with speed. I didn't feel there was enough time for this story to properly breathe. And... shoot, I'm forgetting his name now. Who's the baddie?
Conrad Clark, played by
Conrad,
Jonah
that's
Howard
it.
King.
That's it. He's a con, and also he's a radical as well.
Yeah.
His motivation seemed to me to change relatively regularly to ensure that we were suitably interested at any point in the story. I didn't feel he was particularly coherent as a villain, and I didn't really think that she sold... you do a lot of heavy lifting with a high-speed plot like this, and I don't really think that she had the heavy lifting actor's chops to really do that work.
The antagonist, Conrad Clark, reminded me of the space racist from Rosa, too. It really seemed to be hitting on some past notes in the last decade or so.
Yeah, definitely space racist. Are you also giving off Adam vibes from out of series one?
Yep.
As someone who isn't... I mean, I think if I'm imagining this correctly, what we're tilting against here are people who deliberately take an opposing view to something that they know is true in order to make money. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, Adam, series one, was trying to use his access to a time machine to better himself financially, as far as I remember. Conrad, who, you know, full well knows that UNIT is protecting planet Earth, particularly England, from outer space nasties, is taking that opposite view because that's the way that's going to get him clicks and likes and money on YouTube.
Make money. Yep.
Make money, yeah. So, I mean, it's funny. I actually wrote a little note to myself. It would have been awesome if they had had an older person play Conrad, more like a Nigel Farage kind of person, you know, who is someone who is a grifter, you know, who is deliberately takes the popular point of view, even though he knows full well it's incorrect, in order to become powerful and wealthy. Mm-hmm. However, as much as that would have been fun, I really don't think Millie Gibson could have sold having an affair with a yellow-toothed fright like Nigel Farage.
That would be shock TV.
It would have from May to December. It would have been, and in the wrong way, absolutely. So yeah, I mean, that's how I felt about it. And again, obviously, Conrad has a podcast that everyone listens to, and it seems weird that everyone listens to it. Mm-hmm. But no one realizes that he's actually sort of taking the opposite point of view most of the time or something. Mm. Or maybe he has a secret podcast where he's somebody else. That seemed to me to be muddled. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, it's a big kind of reveal, like, ah, he's a villain. Mm-hmm. When we think he's her boyfriend. I didn't fully understand how that was kind of pulled off, basically. Because if he's famous enough to be making money from a podcast, he's famous enough for her to have heard of him, right?
Yeah. Right.
Or something.
Unless he became famous in the year that she was running around with the Gatla doctor.
Or the year that she was concerned about the fact that she was always 73 yards away from something.
Yeah, that could have been. Yeah,
that could have been. Could have been. Ah, I'm 73 yards away again. Ah.
I thought that was all erased, though.
Was it? I don't know.
Yeah,
I
think
remember.
It was all...
Okay, it was. All right.
Bobby coming out of the shower at the end of 73 yards.
He's 73 yards away. The shower that's exactly 73 yards away.
Shower head's exactly 73 yards
exactly.
away.
Exactly. We jest. So, I mean, that's kind of my initial take, is that yes, but also no.
So the other thing that I found very distracting, and maybe I'm not a good eye for faces, but it looked to me like Howard King, the actor who played Conrad Clark, looked like he was in the McGann family. He looked like one of the McGann brothers to me.
Oh, he looked like a McGann, did he? Oh, interesting. Let me get a picture of him.
Look at the Wikipedia page for Lucky Day.
He does look like a McGann, doesn't he?
So, if I was doing this with that kind of casting, oh, come on, let's have more Eighth Doctor adventures.
Oh, my God, like the young Eighth Doctor adventures. It's like the young Indiana Jones, only it's the Eighth Doctor.
I would do a amalgamation, basically. I would have Paul McGann there, and if you needed to have kind of like a flashback of him reminiscing, then you have Howard King there.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, not quite the same, and I don't know if he has the same color eyes or anything like that, but that's who I kept thinking the casting was a lot like a Paul McGann. And yeah, if you compare him to Withnail and I, they'd look quite different. So I was thinking more of a McGann brother rather than Paul McGann himself as a young person.
He's incredibly posh. So I'm just looking at his biography. And not only he lived in an award-winning architect-designed house... He went to Eton, St. John's College, Cambridge. Mm. He played an actual prince for Disney, and now he's also in a Disney show. Mm. Blimey. graduated degree in theology and religious studies. That's a Mickey Mouse degree if ever there was one. appropriate, then he begins to do stuff for Disney. Wow, okay. All right, that's him. An interesting biography that he has.
Yeah, so that had a hard time for me. I was thinking more of that than the story.
Right, you were like, oh, yeah, he's a McGann of some kind. What's going on? Were you literally expecting something to happen?
No, you weren't. Of course not. But my mind was... I just...
You're wandering off.
My mind wanders. My mind wanders quite a bit whenever Belanda is on the screen. I just do not... I just don't find her acting captivating.
Yeah, she's going to be at Gallifrey 1, actually, next year. Yeah. So I'm going to have the chance to put that to her face-to-face.
There's no need.
My mate David says, you're crap.
No,
actor. She's
fine. It's just, you know, she is absolutely fine. She just doesn't capture my attention.
I don't think that, but my mate David thinks
okay.
That.
Who doesn't have the guts to show up at Gallifrey.
Who doesn't have the guts to say it to your face. and he's got a podcast. He's Conrad. That's
basically,
who he is.
There you go.
There you go. You're absolutely right. I think she's probably good at a lot of things. She is
just not
definitely
solo. Just not solo.
Not solo. She's a great companion. She's almost in the vein of what people think Doctor Who companions are like, which are kind of, you know, plaintive screamers. Mm-hmm. When in fact, as we know, classic era companions largely weren't like that unless they were written wrongly.
Right.
She definitely fades in comparison to Belinda, the real Belinda, Belinda we know and love and adore at this point. Mm-hmm. So comparisons are odious when we compare those two. Mm-hmm. And her arc was a pretty dull one in the first season. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not her fault. I mean, I wasn't excited to see her mother and grandmother again.
And her biological mother. That was a eyebrow waste.
Oh, did she pop up? I guess
I missed
that. Yeah,
because they were in the kitchen when she was going to the...
Oh, yeah, she was. Yes. Of course. Right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, that was like, oh, what? Ah, too many... I mean, I kind of zoned that out. There were too many people.
Yeah.
Too many people.
But it did have a good line from the scientific advisor when she said, towards the end, when mm-hmm. Kate Lethbridge-Stewart was telling her, you know, when you're ready, call me, et cetera, that...
Right.
What do you do, collect mothers?
Yes.
You already have two. What do you do, collect mothers? So I thought that was my favorite line program.
Yeah, that was a nice piece.
I think there's two ways, like with McTeague's earlier writing specific kablam, you can take a very conservative view of this, or you can take a very liberal view of this. And he tries to thread the needle a la Malcolm Hulk, but I don't see it as successfully. And actually not as Malcolm Hulk. I think it's more of a Lincoln and Haseman type take on it.
That's a very astute comment. Yes, you actually summarized up what I was thinking as well very, very accurately and very in far fewer words, which is a problem because we have a podcast to fill. But yes, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. Again, reading around online, people seem to fall into two kind of sort of warring-ish... Oh, it's online, so obviously people are going to be warring. But, you know, part like, oh, it's McTeague taking the side of, like, big government again, like he did with Amazon. Mm-hmm. Or it's like, no, he's saving the planet from aliens. It's, you know, it's... Right. Yeah, and he tries to have it... He had the show... The script tries to have it both ways.
Right.
Is that, you know, UNIT is big government. UNIT is a secret government organization that we're not supposed to know about, that does a whole bunch of things.
Global, international.
A global
United Nations conspiracy. Yeah.
Exactly. Led by the United Nations, which we all know is funded by George Soros or whoever. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean.
Right.
You know, I'm being rhetorical there.
Right.
You know, they're literally doing things in secret, funded by our money, mm-hmm. in order to prevent us from being taken over by aliens. Mm-hmm. But they never tell us that that's what they're doing.
Right.
So, you know, and everyone always forgets kind of thing. So it is a legitimate target for anti-establishment style podcasts. It is, UNIT is a deep state.
Mm-hmm.
It's an obvious deep state of some kind. And obviously nowadays we all hate the deep state, though I think the deep state's kind of awesome. I'd much rather have the world run by a deep state than run by the the shallow state that we currently have.
The amateur clown show that we have currently.
Amateur hour currently, exactly.
At this side of the Atlantic. Yeah.
yes, at least they're professionals. At least the unit know what they're doing. So, yeah, I absolutely agree with you.
So, yes, unit is this global, secretive government NGO. Are they governmental? Are they non-governmental? That, you know,
they're certainly creepy and scary. Right. And, like, we shouldn't. Yeah, exactly. We should be suspicious of their motives.
And they're not paramilitary. They're military.
They're military, mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, we have Conrad Clark, who's basically an anti-vaxxer and shoots off his mouth with these right-wing buzzwords. I mean, he was saying when he was talking to Kate Stewart, the grown-ups are talking now, and it's sort of like,
right,
that's
right.
You? It's just, right. But that's all right-wing noise machine type thing. So
absolutely.
I think Matig is trying to be very current, and I you know, a hat tip, and I applaud him for being current, because that's one of my complaints about Doctor Who is, does it really work with the crisis and the difficult issues that we're facing right now? But rather than land on one side or the other, it kind of has an unsatisfying resolution with Mrs. Flood letting Conrad Clark escape, and the Doctor really not having... He is the man with the magic box, but Conrad Clark basically just chooses to blow him off. And he isn't... It isn't a life-changing moment. If anything, it further entrenches him in his antagonism.
Yeah, I'll come to that. I'll come back to that in a second. I mean, I do think it's interesting that we... As I said, I mean, I've described the characters like as a Farage style person, you know, someone who knows what the truth is but deliberately takes the opposite point of view because that's where the money is.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been perhaps more interesting to push him further in the direction of kind of an RFK Jr. / Joe Rogan, like an absolute moron who wouldn't know an alien if it came and bit him, and you know, wouldn't know a right. vax if it stopped him from having a brain worm, you know. And again, you know, if you think about Conrad as more of a kind of Joe Rogan character, which is, you know, obviously a huge podcast, which is helmed by someone who's basically an idiot, apart from being able to make money,
mm-hmm.
rather than someone who is, you know, sneaky. But you mm-hmm. have to have someone sneaky, because only a sneaky person would pretend to be someone's boyfriend when they really want is just get inside unit, though they were sort of already inside unit because they have an inside person.
Mm-hmm.
Sort
of like he has an inside person, so he must be making enough money to hire this guy. Because
yeah, to pay
he has,
would, yeah.
Because he's not is he a true believer? He basically nearly kills him on the stairwell as he's heading up the...
With his gun. I mean, he kind of bursts into Unit HQ, which obviously quite an easy place to burst into, apparently.
Well, either that or land a helicopter in there. There's many ways to assail Unit HQ.
Many ways. Because, you know, it's a giant skyscraper in the center of London. And again, I mean, I think this is where the plot kind of flexes all over the place to kind of fit all our current villains into the frame. He kind of bursts into Unit HQ like someone bursting into Ping Pong Pizza in Washington, you know, with an automatic weapon, like determined to rescue all the children being held by pedophiles in the basement. So again, he at that point he's that kind of villain. You know, he's also like a, you know, podcaster style villain. I said he's a Farage style villain. He's an internet prankster because all of his friends dress up as aliens. So
he's basically all the right wing agitprop rolled up into one without any kind of consistency of MO between them.
Yeah, yeah, which I think, you know, if we'd had longer, we'd this been two episodes or something, or I don't know, just 10 minutes longer, maybe we'd have been able to string that together better, or if we'd maybe just stuck to one particular kind of irritating right-wing online villain, or a, you know, a mad gunman, mm-hmm. you know, who's determined to free the children that UNIT are holding and doing experiments on or something, I don't know.
He also strikes me as a man who just won't believe anything when it literally bites him in the arm or bites him in the ass. He's nearly killed by the, what is it, Shriek?
Shriek. Shriek, yeah.
And he's goes in full denial. It's sort of like,
yeah,
his mind is so closed off that he will not, or you can read it, he's so cynical that he will not admit.
Yes, that way there's a particular kind of truth that there are people, and we know them only too well. The more something is absolutely proved to them by waving it in front of their face, the more they will disbelieve it. The more you try and prove something to someone, the more they will say that's obviously not true. You know, which is a particular kind of online personality. I had two things I was thinking about, the kind of scene in the TARDIS where the Doctor pops up and he's
at the end.
He's in his prison cell.
Yeah.
The first of which, I felt that the Doctor's speech to him was quite undoctory. The Doctor doesn't usually turn up and tell people that they're going to die miserably and feel happy and feel that's something that is worth telling someone. The Doctor usually has more compassion and more understanding than that. It seemed like a mean thing to say.
Yeah.
It just didn't strike me as being very doctorish, especially not this Doctor.
It did strike me as very season arcish, where Conrad Clark must be returning in the last couple episodes.
That's exactly what I thought. And the other thing that really jumped out at me, and I don't know whether it jumped out at you, is the phraseology that Conrad Clark uses to dismiss the Doctor. And he says, "I deny this reality."
Yeah, another callback.
A callback to, you know, The Matrix.
Yep.
And The Deadly Assassin, where the Doctor is the Doctor, this is the Doctor speaking, is in somewhere that isn't real, and in order to get back to somewhere that is realer, or in order to see where he really is rather than where the Matrix wants him to think he is, he says, "I deny this reality," and, you know, the computer circuit boards kind of emerge in front of his eyes. You know, whether that's just a fun callback for old school fans like us, or whether that's an actual, this idea we were having last week that, you know, that Mrs. Flood is some kind of guardian of stories, that, you know, we're not in a reality. This is all some kind of fiction. Well, obviously it's a fiction, it's a TV show, but the show itself, the action of the show is also taking place inside some kind of fictional environment.
Well, since Lux, Mrs. Flood has definitely taken a darker turn, both in last week's story, The Well, and in this week's story, Lucky Day. So,
yeah.
I don't know if she's guardian of the show.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, I've just finished reading a couple of thousand page book. A friend of the podcast, Greg, lent to me. Hey, Greg. About the filming of The Shining. Mm. You know, the famous supernatural movie, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
And when Jack Torrance is locked by his wife, Wendy, inside the food store in the Overlook Hotel, which is this kind of like, yes, Wendy's beaten him. And then the room is then unlocked by a mysterious supernatural force. And as originally, apparently, it was filmed, we actually see who that mysterious supernatural force in fact is, but Kubrick didn't use the actual images, and it was just more mysterious. So Mrs. Flood was kind of reminding me of that. You know, he's released from his cell by something that is, you know, literally supernatural. And the prison, you know, governors of men's prisons aren't usually women. And they certainly can't wander down to your cell, unlock it, and let you out.
Right.
We don't have, unfortunately in Britain, we don't have such things as presidential pardons. You can't just like let someone out of prison because you feel like it. Mm-hmm. They have to be, you know, I guess, proved not to have done the crime in the first place. So that seems to me, I don't know, some kind of, there's something fictional going on here. Now, whether, obviously, you know, with Lux last week, it was actual fictional. You know, it was a cartoon that came to life. And whether we're actually going to develop this theme, and whether it's going to pay off, and whether it's a theme at all, and I'm not making it up, I don't know. But there seems to be something going on here, certainly for me.
Yeah. I feel like we're in a big arc that opened up with the Tenant 3 specials from the 60th anniversary year. And I feel like they're all sort of leading up to, I guess, probably something at the end of the season would be my hunch.
Right. Yes. Some kind of payoff on May the 24th.
Yeah.
That will reveal Mrs. Flood
unmasked
and what she is, and Mrs. Flood unmasked, and will, you know, tell us how all this relates to the whole, you know, pantheon thing, which is, you know, we've been leaning into the pantheon as the pantheon is pantheon of, you know, mm-hmm. thing, people, whatever they are not just black and white like we thought they were, but they're also, there's music right. and light and, you know, a bunch of things that you weren't yeah. sort of expecting them to be.
I know we spent, what, last few minutes talking about Mrs. Flood, but again, Russell T. Davis,
he's the man.
You're forcing this. I really am still not feeling it. I feel like I have to talk about it because she's now directly involved in the plot at the end, but
right.
I'm not really that curious about who she is.
I don't care.
It's more of a why, and the why is self-fulfilling because she's a season arc, and that's what we're leading up to.
Yeah, I would be more curious if she wasn't Anita Dobson, wife of Brian May, and also from EastEnders.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure she's a lovely person, but again, it's Angie from the Old Vic. It's like, what's Angie doing on the show from the Old Vic? What's going on? Because that's because I'm old and I remember her being Angie at the Old Vic on EastEnders, and that's all I've really seen her in, to be honest. So, you know, that's kind of a disconnect for me a little bit.
I think it would work better if we didn't have Susan Twist in last season in every episode.
Well,
popping
she's
up.
Doing the. Yes, exactly. As we said last week, she's doing a Susan Twist thing now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and obviously I'm mates with Susan Twist now. So, I mean, she's a fabulous actor, done a lot of awesome. Oh, actually, probably a lot more things than. Think than Anita Dobson has. But, you know, the character is. It's the same ish character, Russell. Mm-hmm. Or at least it seems to be from our perspective,
mm-hmm.
and we don't know what you're planning because you haven't told us, obviously, but she seems to be doing the same kind of thing. I think especially at the end of last episode, no, which episode was she like on a screen? Hang on, episode before last.
The well.
Yeah, yes, it was last episode. Yeah, when she was on a big screen as like some kind of military commander. It's like, well, if she's a kind of a floating story person, that's not going to work. If she's Sutek, yes, that probably is going to work, as according to how we now understand Sutek functions. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Mm.
So get some additional unit details in this. It looks like Kate Lethbridge-Stewart and the Colonel Christopher Ibrahim have a relationship
little
going thing, on
little,
after
little,
hours.
Little thing going. Yeah, lovely. Yeah,
which
yeah.
was more...
Dalliance.
Yeah, which was more interesting to me than much of. I want. Could you have pulled that string a little bit more to figure out what's going on there? Maybe in
right.
subsequent episodes.
Well, I mean, I think obvious. I feel obviously, and I pointed this out to my lovely wife who watched this with me. We have a big spin-off coming with the war between the land
right,
and the sea.
Right.
So we need to reintroduce UNIT. We need to have definitive characters in UNIT. We've gotten rid of the child on the scooter, and we're back with I can't remember her name.
Shirley Bingham.
Their name.
Shirley Bingham.
Shirley Bingham as a to me a more believable scientific advisor.
Probably the most believable scientific advisor that we've had in quite a while. Because
yeah.
Anyone in the modern, I guess Osgood was too fangirl.
Yeah,
I think.
They did that. Yeah, and then what's his name? The comedian was too obviously a joke.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, really an actual seriously scientific. I mean, a kind of Liz Shaw level.
Mm-hmm.
Scientific advisor, and we've got Colonel Ibrahim, who's now a character because he's having what would probably be a very ill-advised romance with his boss. And yeah, and we
keep thinking of Mike Yates in the brig.
Well, thank you. Because we're assembling some parts that are going to be used for when the Silurians and Sea Devils, in conjunction with the fish people, I'm going to add, decide that they're going to attack the land for reasons currently unspecified, but I'm sure they will become clear.
Well,
fish people.
So UNIT is in that one. I have heard absolutely nothing on it. So I guess it would make sense, right?
I mean, I have also heard absolutely nothing on it. This is not spoilers. This is purely my assumption that we've got some kind of spin-off that is non-doctory, which involves indigenous Earth alien life forms and fish people having some kind of conflict. And mm-hmm. a unit is going to have to be involved, because why wouldn't they be? I mean, they must be. They must be. They must be, yeah.
Another bit of unit continuity is the Vlinx is back for whatever reason. Absolutely no role, no purpose, other than maybe the Nick Briggs contracted guarantee that he's going to be in the program every year. I really don't understand what RTD is trying to do with Vlinx. It seems to be worthless.
He's really got to stop making Vlinx happen, to be honest, because we're not buying it. Well, it's not even that. He's not even trying that hard, to be honest. Again, as I think we've probably said before, why have the Vlinx when you've already got Mr. Smith? Just bring Mr. Smith back and have a brick wall in the unit tower that falls apart, and then Mr. Smith emerges in a cloud of smoke to say a thing.
Because
he's already been established as a supercomputer that's helpful.
You would think after Sarah Jane Smith died that unit would seize Mr. Smith. I can't imagine her son retaining control of Mr. Smith.
No. And you could easily move Mr. Smith from Muswell Hill or wherever he lived, or wherever that house was, to Croydon, to central London. It would have been easy. But we have the Vlinx now. I'm looking forward to Big Finish Vlinx spin-offs, where the Vlinx has static adventures elsewhere.
Static is right.
Static by just standing there.
Mm-hmm.
Being attached to something adventures.
Yeah.
It's like a non-mobile Dalek of some kind.
And the HR security screening for UNIT is abysmal.
Absolutely abysmal, because not only are they letting Conrad's mates come in without checking them, but they're letting the head of unit have an affair with the military head of unit. It's not good.
It's not very good. But yeah, just that they discover that the mole inside unit has all these problems that should have shown up when he was getting his initial screen, and there should be ongoing screens with I think the character is Jordan Lang. It's that kind of sloppiness. I mean, maybe that's just an indication of where UNIT is now after being dismantled under the Chibnall era.
And then remantled again.
And reestablished. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, UNIT's always been kind of shonky in terms of its, way that it runs itself.
Liberty Hall,
which is great when they're based in a bunch of porter cabins, next door to Mick Jagger's house.
Yeah.
It's less convincing when they have a giant shining tower with a helicopter pad in the middle of central London. That's an oxymoron. In the middle of London.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if we're going to have them be easily penetrated, by rogue podcasters, then put them back in the porter cabins in Surrey, and then that seems more believable. Because I think as much as we love the Brigadier and Mike Yates and Sergeant Benton and Private Sponge and all the other units,
Bill Filer,
all the other units, people,
Joe Grant,
Joe Grant. I mean, HR really missed. She can't see. She's no good as a secret agent. Her uncle got her the job.
Yeah, nepotism, pure and simple. There.
I mean, that's a believable unit. Mm-hmm. That's a more believable unit to me than the kind of super science unit that we currently have, with a bunch of aliens locked in the basement, but still they can't get their HR right.
Yeah. The whole locking of aliens in the basement, that was a role, I guess, taken over from Torchwood once Torchwood crumbled.
Because
it just doesn't... Again, this is my 1970s bias, but I think Doctor Who works better on the smaller scale, where UNIT is kind of this afterthought of the United Nations.
Scrappy.
Yeah, the Doctor is stopping the small alien menace so it doesn't become a big problem. This kind of shows how Kate Stewart has picked up her father's mantle, just letting the Shriek go after Clark. But I wonder why they didn't just let him, the Shriek, finish the job.
Right.
Because he was live streaming. It just seemed like there's nothing getting through to Conrad Clark, and it just seemed messy to me, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's not very unity if UNIT, like, lets the aliens eat the people, even if they're bad people. And I know it's happened in the past that aliens have eaten bad people because, you know, bad people are bad. Mm-hmm. But to have it kind of happen sort of quasi-deliberately seems un-unity, just like as I think the Doctor's speech to Conrad seemed un-doctory to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then conversely, unleashing a shriek on someone to basically scare some sense into them,
right,
that doesn't seem very brigadier-y either, to be honest. That doesn't seem to be very compassionate. And also it's kind of risky because, you know, shrieks are obviously dangerous to have around.
But I guess if they had their prey, it's not an alien that I think we're going to see again. So there's probably not a lot of ecology, shriek thought gone into it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in a traditional Who setting, you know, obviously the shriek would be following Conrad around and he'd be like, not believing it. And then, you know, it attacks him for reals this time and he then believes it. And then the Doctor finds a clever way to defeat the shriek, and then Conrad changes his mind and promises never to do a podcast ever again. I mean, that's what should happen. Mm. None of that really happens. Mm. And I mean, I guess that's the nature of kind of new storytelling. We're not kind of happy with that anymore. And also, you know, it would be a little bit dull because we've seen that happen on kind of numerous-ish occasions where the villain kind of changes their spots. I actually felt towards the end that Conrad was kind of masterish, and I was wondering whether he was going to suddenly pull off his face to reveal the face of somebody else.
You know,
I don't know why he'd do that, but you know,
you could have done that in series 3. I mean, that,
or,
basically a Harold Saxon type maneuver that you expose him to be the master or something, that would have made sense, I guess, in the terms of the master.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could have had him in the cell and he turns around and he's grown a beard. I was like, yes, it's the master. He's got a silly beard. And I don't know who lets him out of the cell. Maybe he's in a special prison. So I don't know. Yeah. Maybe he's been let out of the cell by fish people. Rather, again,
not fish people, by the sea devils.
I was going to say, the master's already been let out of the cell by sea devils.
Oh, there
this
you go.
Time, he gets let out of the cell by a fish person.
I don't know if they can breathe out of water.
I'm just going to keep on going on about fish people, obviously. So yeah.
Hashtag not going to happen.
Hashtag they're not going to be in it. I do like fish people, though. So I mean, he was giving off mastery vibes. He was giving off Adam vibes.
Mm-hmm.
He was giving off, you know, space racist vibes. He obviously wasn't giving off incel vibes because he's already shagging Ruby Sunday.
Yeah.
He's all villains to everybody, which I guess is why at the end he seemed to be masterish to me, because the master is just an all-encompassing villain who actually doesn't really believe in anything other than being a villain.
In it for himself.
Yeah, which is kind of what Conrad is. He doesn't believe in anything apart from being the bad person.
Yeah, basically that's his identity, so that's who he's going to be. He can't break through it.
Right.
And I guess his motivation explanation is that his mom doesn't like him or beat him.
Yeah, his mom's kind of a jerk. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was actually super shocking, in fact. I was not expecting that level of mom on child violence so early in the episode. That really kind of like shook me. Again, it didn't feel very Doctor Who-y. I mean, I can see how we're very quickly establishing a psychological profile for this child, because he's badly beaten by his mother. And, you know, when he sees something that's true, he's beaten till he admits it's a lie. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, again, that might have you grow up to be
Conrad Clark
who goes to Eden and St. John's College, Cambridge, or whatever. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot in this, which actually makes it this episode's fun to talk about. And I think a lot of them, you know, some episodes in this current Doctor's tenure have not been that fun to talk about. Mm-hmm. But I actually find this one quite fun to talk about, which is a point in its favour.
Yeah, with probably the biggest worry I have or concern I have taking away from the story is the foreknowledge that Clark has of Belinda.
Hmm.
And granted, he saw Belinda when he was a child, but he also, the dialogue seemed to indicate that he had been seeing or following this blue box, this doctor, before he saw it on New Year's Day, because his mom was mm-hmm. kind of sick of his blue box fantasies, and this time it's real, and then he gets welted or belted. So what does he know that happens to Belinda that's in store for her? And what this was,
yeah.
this was what, episode
four?
Five? Four.
Four, yeah.
So we got
three more episodes.
Got four more stories, four more episodes,
four more episodes. I mean, I think you're definitely right. He's coming back. 100% he's coming back mm-hmm. in some form, whether it is in the form of a master or whatever. I don't know. Yeah, he'll be back. He has to be back because he's been let out. You know, he's now free again. You know, unlike Harold Saxon, he doesn't really seem to have a power base apart from his stupid mates.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, who knows? Who knows what? Who knows what? Maybe he'll team up with Gwilym Ap Gwilym.
Maybe
the evil prime minister of the future. But we're talking about 2025, aren't we? So yeah, Gwilym Ap Gwilym hasn't become.
Yeah, it's in the future. Yeah,
the evil prime minister
true.
Of the future. Yeah, that is in the future. Future. Yeah. So
interesting.
Yeah. Well, conundrum. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Next week looks interesting. Looks like it's possibly set in Africa somewhere.
Oh yeah, I immediately started thinking about you talking about they wanted to use some. I can't remember what context you're talking about that. Oh, yeah, last week in the well, it was going to be some kind of Nigerian thing,
mm-hmm.
and then they couldn't do it, so it became the
Midnight Monster.
Midnight Monster, yeah. Exactly. So this week we seem to be actually in Nigeria.
Or someplace, yeah. Or
someplace similar in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I think it seems to be contemporary, right?
That was my take, but it was hard to tell from that 30-second teaser.
So that's interesting. I mean, the doctor doesn't often go to Africa unless it's Egypt.
and there are Daleks involved.
Which is also Africa. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it may be curious to see what we're going to do with that.
Yeah. Looking forward to next week. So
I think so, yeah.
So that's about all I have, I think. For my hot take on Lucky Day.
I think you've had all my hot takes as well at this point. I can't think of any more takes that I have. All the other takes I have are cold.
All right. Well, then, thank you for listening to episode 266 of the Metabolist 2 podcast. I have been wondering how we can monetize and turn dark this podcast with Ben.
Just, Doctor Who doesn't exist. It's all a conspiracy. with David.
Until next time.
Goodbye.
Like the legend of the phoenix, all ends with beginnings. What keeps the planet spinning? The force from the beginning.